Local groups are at the heart of climate organizing, but expressing cumulative power works best when local groups are connected to national and international climate movements. How can these connections be made and maintained to establish a unified voice for change?
Welcome to Climate Organizing Shorts, where we're having short but inspiring conversations with climate organizers to help give you ideas for how you can build momentum for change in your community.
Climate Organizing Shorts is a collaboration between Pullback Podcast and the Climate Justice Organizing Hub. I'm Kyla Hewson, and I'm here with the immaculate Kristen Pugh.
On today's episode, we spoke with Leila Escobar from Fridays for Future Peru. Leila is a highly committed youth organizer for Fridays for Future who has experience engaging with her local group as well as at the national level and internationally. She offers valuable perspectives on navigating the intricacies of local and national movement building efforts and discusses how organizers can facilitate the connection between these levels. Hit it! I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about sort of how you sort of bring people into a movement and keep them engaged when you're organizing locally.
In 2019, I was not directly involved in that, you know, in those actions, but I saw many, many people in the streets, which was really, amazing for me because I had never seen that for environmental related topics. So it was really good to see how many people are concerned about these topics. And it can influence other people to get more active. So that's great. But then during the pandemic, when we tried to do this again, it was really hard because everyone was dealing with their own problems, which is totally fine because, you know, COVID changed our lives. But it was really difficult. So when we tried to kind of do another big action, we had to find a topic that concerned us all. And it should be climate change. But the truth is that not everyone is, you know, only concerned about climate change. We all have our own problems. So we had to find a topic that will keep us active. And like we try to use the COVID problem to unite us all. So it was like, how do we relate this issue to climate change so that people can get more concerned about this? So, you know, and there's also a lot of connections between this kind of disease or infections with the change in our environment. At least in the grading part, it was easy to make the connections, but then you have to explain it to people. And at the local level, there, at least in Peru, there is always something going on in the political part. So you kind of need to get people's attention from that political thing. That's really important because politicals, you know, like drive our lives, but you need to make the connections. I think that's when it's really important to talk not only about climate change as an environmental problem, but as a social problem, you know, to make this intersection because it helps more people to see this is a integral problem. So in that way, it's also more easy to contact other organizations, you know, not only environmental organizations or youth organizations, but also like social organizations. Like alone, just us, I think it would be impossible to keep people engaged, but we need other organizations. And that's why, like, at least in my local group, we always like highlight this importance of coordinate for any campaign of action with our organizations so that our actions can have more impact on people. And also because if we organize something alone, well, we have a lot more responsibilities, but also, you know, we don't have the expertise to talk about some social things. We can talk about the climate crisis, how it's important, but then if people want to know more about certain topics, we cannot answer them all. And it's fine because, you know, we are not experts. That's why it's important to have other people who know more about these things. Maybe at the beginning, they're only interested about, for example, food insecurity, right? But then they can listen to us and they can also know that food insecurity is also related or is influenced by climate change. It was really important and is still really important to articulate with other organizations, do the outreach, to be really open, because something that has happened to me and like in my local group, when we do in-person actions, you know, in the street, we have these banners saying climate change is real or something like that. But then some people just come and say like, what are you talking about? And it's okay that they have no idea, because like climate education is not everywhere. It's not so accessible. So you have to be open, you know, for some people who will come to criticize you, even just in the streets, because they'll say, why are you doing? Why are you not studying? Or why are you not doing something more useful? But then you also have to be able to inform these people who don't know anything about this. Say, hey, this is climate change. This is how it affects us all. And this is why we need to get involved. And this is why we need to take action on this. But then like being able to do that, it also requires like a lot of preparation. Something in the academia, but also I think in the climate movement, is that we use certain terms or words that are not known for most people, you know?
When it comes to sort of speaking to people who may not know the jargon on climate change, what are some of the things that you would say to them that are good entry points for having more conversations and bringing them in?
We need to relate it to their daily lives. So in Peru, these El Niño events have been really destructive. There was a big one in 2016. People were displaced and some people died because of that in all the coasts in Peru. So when we talk about climate change, I would start with, you know, we all remember that things were more expensive, that there were many landslides, even in the city. I would say like, okay, these kind of events are really related to the environmental factors, you know, temperature, how hot it is, how rainy it is. Climate change will affect that too. Nobody wants to live that event again, even though it's something that will happen. Actually, it's terrible because we know that these events, like the El Niño event, will happen every few years. And we cannot do anything about that besides, you know, adaptation. But that's another topic.
I'm wondering, like, once you've gotten somebody, once they've come in the door because they've sort of realized that climate change is an issue and they want to do something about it, how do you sort of get them into those initial actions? And how do you kind of keep their engagement sustained in a climate organization?
The first thing is to inform them first about climate change in general, some basic things, but also how the climate movement is working right now. Before 2020, I also sent like a message to my local group. They didn't reply for a while. So that's why at the end, I joined the international level first. Sometimes, honestly, we're not prepared for that, for people who just grant us that. Because when we do these calls for new people, sometimes they have to, you know, to go through a process so that we kind of know they are ready, you know? When I was in this international, like, digital group, I was part of the onboarding process. So the first thing they had to do is, you know, to show interest and social media, an email or anything. I don't know how effective it was, but we would send them an email with some things they had to read. And it was not so much about climate change itself, because we already had, you know, like very informative posts and resources in our social media. If people is like trying to connect with you, and they are supposed to already have read those, that's something important to recheck then. We would send them this information, and then they would basically join a call and talk to them, like, basically, why do you want to join? And any answer was, okay, actually, like, you know, I'm not an interviewer, and I was just like, I don't know, like 16 years old. So it was not an interview. It was just saying their interest and also explaining how things work. Because at international level, it's even more difficult to explain the technical things. We tried to make it clear since the beginning, because an issue we had before was that people join the group and then they don't know what to do, so they just get inactive. And that's a problem we have in different groups, not only there. So we wanted to have this call, like making sure they understood everything so that when they are in a call, they know what to do, what they will be doing in the organization, and they have a better idea of who to contact if they need any help. If they are kind of lost, that person, usually with more experience, will help them to get involved. But then at the local level, we have a more long process to join the organization. It takes some days, if not weeks. to have like finally people who are joining, because also like at the local level, not only in Peru, but in many Latin American countries, like there is this security thing. So we want to make sure people who are joining are, you know, not people with bad intentions. I think in the international level, we are not that focused on that because, like, you know, we share sensitive things, but it's online. So still, you won't say your top secrets in a Zoom meeting, right? But in a local level, we are not that much. So we share a lot of things that are not only related to our campaigns, but also political things, because we also do some advocacy. So you have to make sure people who are in the call and who get that information are reliable. So that's why it takes a bit longer to kind of select or to receive the people. But it's also good for them because they can know if they're really interested, because sometimes people just want to help in the campaigns, you know, going to the in-person actions, which is great because we need more people in the streets. But they have the opportunity to really compare if they want to be in the organization part or they just want to go to the actions. And we have like different ways for people who don't want to get more involved, but they want to participate in the actions. So they know whenever we're doing an action or a campaign, they will know and they can participate, actively participate. I think it has worked so far, but still we have this problem of keeping people engaged. And I realized that they lost this engagement because they didn't know what to do. Like, that's a problem we have. Like, for most of us, it's not a work, you know, we don't get paid for this. So you cannot obligate someone, hey, this is your thing, you have to finish this by tomorrow. But I think we are still figuring out that, like, how to get people engaged in a long term.
From what you've experienced, what does keep somebody motivated when they are? Like, is it the sort of social connections they make? Is it being on a working group and having something really tangible to do? Is it something else?
Everyone has different intentions, interests, and that's fine. Like, at the beginning, when you join, most of us are interested in, you know, helping something to change. But then you realize you have to actually do things. You have to, you know, kind of work on something. I think it's really useful to have something going on, like at least when you just join, to have a campaign already being prepared so you can just help with that. I mean, it worked for me at least. When you see someone is already doing something really big or important and you start helping with them, you get a lot of experience and you can just do your like small tasks. You also don't get overwhelmed with the responsibilities. I think that's actually like a really good way to get people more involved. But that, of course, will not take long. Like, it's just for 1, 2, or 3 months. But then with that experience, people can create or elaborate their own campaigns. I mean, that's like the idea, you know? But sometimes it's difficult for people to go from this helping point to that, you know, point where you are taking the lead. And I think that's what differentiates some people in the movement. But we need more of that. We need more perspectives, more new ideas. So it's fine if at the beginning we want to join because of the social interactions. And it's fine because after some months, if you realize you don't really like that, you can leave. You didn't do something wrong, right? You helped. But then if you see you really like how it works, the climate movement, activism, and these kind of organizations, and then you continue it, and that's great. I think there is no losses, you know, when someone joins the movement.
You've mentioned the importance of sort of linking climate issues to other kinds of issues. And one of the things that you talked about earlier was climate justice and its connections to other kinds of justice. Is it important to keep and create connections with organizations that aren't necessarily climate organizations, but might work in other justice spaces? And how do you like approach starting those relationships?
We focus on that a lot at a local level, but I think like at the international level, it's also a big thing. And how do we link everyone's perspective or issues? You know, the central thing is like human survival, actually, or human well-being. Even though like everyone has a different perspective, some organizations talk more about, you know, social justice. Well, anyway, we always keep saying this in this movement that climate justice is and has to be social justice. So that's like a good start. Also, like the perspective we have as organization, like in what we show in our social media or in our talks and in our campaigns, it also helps other organizations to know who we are, how we think. So for example, in my local group, in our Instagram pages or social media pages, we have well stated that we believe this, that climate justice cannot be achieved without social justice. That's a good start for when we want to make new connections with other not climate related organizations, because we can say like, hey, you know, we have this perspective, we support your fight, and we want to work with you because we believe it's important for us to work together in order to achieve both our goals. Actually, like most organizations are really open to that. First of all, because they know that at least climate-related things are kind of popular between young people, and some organizations related to gender equality or social justice, they want to, you know, to get more attention for this young public. So they are usually more than open to work with us and collaborate for different actions. But that's, you know, that's just the beginning, because then it comes the hard part of the meetings, and when you're writing the narrative for any campaign or action, and you have to make something work for all the parts, you know? And that's the most difficult part, because everyone wants to, you know, kind of highlight their struggle, and that's fine. But we always had to figure it out it in some way that everyone is kind of happy, and then highlight that everything will affect us all as humans and our health, because, you know, people always worry about our health and our how we are living right now. So that's what we always try to focus, you know, how this will affect us all, not only our health, but also our well-being, because social justice is also related to how we deserve to live. And what's really interesting is that some organizations that we have worked with, like before, they didn't have this perspective of also like climate change. So once we have worked with them, it's really interesting how they use more this narrative of how the environment and the climate is involved in all the other problems we have. So when they have their own actions, they can also talk about this. And when we have our actions, like independent actions, we can also talk about other issues like food security, social injustice, gender equality. So it's a really rich experience for all the organizations involved, even though like during the process it may be a bit hard to achieve this, but once we have done that, it's a really great experience.
If you are organizing sort of a joint campaign with, say, like a social justice organization, what does that look like in practice?
Well, like at the beginning, the outreach part, as I said, it's sometimes not that difficult because most organizations are open to collaborate. But then the logistical part is the most difficult one. The basic things for these kind of actions or campaigns are, you know, first the topic, then the dates, and then the logistical part of who is doing everything, or, you know, who is doing what. So we usually have this like press team, another team for outreach, another team for the internal logistics, another one for social media, and all these things. And then you have to make sure that every organization is somehow involved, so that when we have, you know, one of like an call to give updates, one organization cannot say that, hey, I didn't know anything about this. So what are you talking about? Like, you're making decisions without my knowledge, you know? So it's really hard, like in the practice, to have this transparency and that everyone feels like they're contributing. At the local level, the good thing we have, like in contrast with organizing international thing, is the language, you know? In some cults, international cults, you have this live interpretation, because sometimes people cannot communicate or they don't feel comfortable talking or listening in English, so they want to have an interpreter, which is fine and it's also really useful, but then they don't feel that good speaking in English, so they won't talk, and that's bad because everyone has something to say, you know? But at the national level, at least we don't have that, because in Peru we all speak Spanish. Well, that's not true. We don't all speak Spanish, but most of us do. So we have that advantage. But then even if we speak the same language, we don't have the same ways to say things. That can also be important because, as I said, sometimes in the club movement, we have different words or terms we use. Also, those organizations, like, for example, the social justice one, they have their own words. And I have found myself, like, listening to a meeting and couldn't understand it. They're speaking in Spanish, but I just don't understand because they are mentioning, you know, some technical word. I don't think they are technical, you know, they are more fancy words. And I just don't understand and I need to Google them. But then, you know, I'm not completely listening to what they are saying. So I miss a lot of the call. We don't consider that because we assume everyone knows. Everyone involved in this climate activism already knows about that, but that's not true. You know, it's like a continual learning thing.
If you want to learn more about Fridays for Future or are interested in helping to organize the 2024 global climate strike, check out their website at fridaysforfuture.org to find a local group near you.
And if you want to learn more about the Climate Justice Organizing Hub and the work that they do, check out their wiki, which provides information and resources for activists in the climate justice movement.
The wiki is an excellent tool for information on all sorts of topics related to climate justice, like accessibility, burnout and care, movement structure, recruitment and retention, student organizing, and more. You can find a link to the wiki in the show notes or visit lehub.ca.